Sunday Times Alan Payton Award for the best local book of non-fiction was announced late last week, and it's gone to Andrew Harding's book, which sounds absolutely fascinating. These Are Not Gentle People. I'm sorry to say I haven't read it yet, but I certainly intend to. It's a description, it's a true story of crime, punishment, and redemption around the brutal beating and death of two young men and those accused of committing the crime in a small Free State farming town. It's a true story. It's explored in great detail and apparently with great empathy and great insight. It's in a really good tradition, following work that people like Johnny Steinberg has done with One Day in Bethlehem and Midlands, of just not taking crime as a lump event, taking an individual crime and pulling it apart and making it a human story. Who did what and why and how and what is the context? So needed in this country. So I'm delighted to welcome Andrew Harding to the show. Andrew, very good afternoon to you and congratulations.
Mike, thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you.
Does sound like a really interesting story. Now, firstly, I want to lead you on your journey to writing this story. You're British born. You're a journalist who's worked all around the world. You ended up in Johannesburg. You've been there a while. How did you end up following this story?
Well, it's a tricky one. I was covering the Oscar Pistorius case at great length, and it was the first time I'd really covered a trial, and I realized what many, many people had realized before me, which is that trials and court cases and crime makes for extraordinary drama. And I was looking around for something, another kind of story that I could follow, ideally from day one, essentially. I wanted to write a sort of in cold blood style, true non-fiction novel, and I was looking for an incident that I could follow, and I stumbled upon this case in January 2016 of this double killing, it seemed, a murder investigation in the Free State, and I started going down there, and the magistrates' court was involved, and they'd already arrested a few people, and the bail hearing was taking place, and I was immediately kind of riveted by the politics, by the fury of this community being already torn apart over who did what and why. And I decided that this was the case for me. And I was, I guess, lucky as a writer that over the next few years, it unfolded in so much drama and so many different ways that the community split. You had the initial accused splitting with uncles and nephews turning on their own relatives and becoming state witnesses. And you had the extraordinary passions within this community of white farmers and also the black community who said, look, these two men that were beaten up, who died after this beating by these white farmers, they insisted they weren't robbers at all. So you had all this nuance and all this complexity. And I hoped it could allow me to kind of explain something about what's going on in South Africa, certainly in these problematic communities where people are so divided.
Did you find people willing to talk? Were they happy with your presence? Were they happy to let you know their emotions and their engagements?
So I had the luxury of time, and it took, you know, 4 years of research. And over time, I think, rather than any great trick or skill on my part, that fact that I was always around, people started to open up. Clearly, though, it's a very strange role for an outsider to play. You are an intruder and you are performing a very intrusive role. You're burrowing into a community in great pain and great agony in the aftermath of this horrible event that has devastated so many families of those who died, but also those accused whose lives have been upturned. And there you are, this outsider, standing around poking into people's business. So it's a weird role, and it's not a comfortable one. But people were, in general, quite opening up to me. And I think people found it, in some cases, quite useful, quite cathartic to have an outsider that they could speak to. And what I tried to do in the book was to be kind of honest with everyone and paint everybody's story and try to get to some sort of truth of that. Because ultimately, I think it's more interesting as a reader if you have all those different versions of the truth and you're left to do some hard work yourself to work out what you really think happened.
Was language a barrier? Was it possible to do this all in English, or did you need interpreters?
I mean, it's a barrier everywhere in South Africa, isn't it? I mean, we swan around speaking English and hoping it'll get us by.
No, to get a true understanding of this, you'd need a lot of help.
And I did, and I had some very useful help from a man in the township there, a chap called Mbulelo Mchilibe, who acted as my translator, particularly with the Sesotho population. I also had some help with Afrikaans, although luckily a lot of Afrikaners speak very good English and were willing to talk to me as well.
Has there been a reaction from them, from the people that you put in the story? Have they read the book, reported back to you their thoughts?
You know, as I said earlier, my job is quite an intrusive one. And what I did and what the decision I took was, look, I'm going to be open with everyone. I'm taking notes. Then I'm going to write my book. And the book is the final comment, really. And I haven't heard much back yet from people, because it's only now that we've just had the final sentencing. So in a sense that the trial has only just finished, and I felt it would be even more intrusive. I keep kind of popping up and asking people what they think. And I'm waiting to hear if there is any feedback, but frankly, I'm not expecting that much.
The reality of these stories is there is no tidy bow, is there? You don't tie it up neatly at the end with a process. This is something that lingers in this community for a long time.
Exactly. And I mean, the pain of these families torn apart, and the pain of the families of the two dead men who have been forced to wait 5 years for a verdict that could easily have come so much more quickly, and a verdict that, of course, they feel is the South African state, the South African justice system, saying to them, nobody killed your sons. Nobody was responsible for their deaths, which is obviously something that they find totally unacceptable.
Andrew, what's your next project? Obviously, you've got a knack for this. This book has got this very serious accolade. I'm looking forward to reading it. Do you have another project in line?
Well, I made a radio series and podcast of that book for BBC Radio called Bloodlands, and I'm actually busy finishing off a new radio series and podcast called Poison, which is about one Jacob Zuma, focusing really on his obsession with this idea that he is being or has been poisoned, and using that as a way to look into his character and what's driven him, and, you know, what he suffered during the apartheid era, and the kind of the paranoia that built up from, you know, Frank Chikane's underpants through to, you know, the poison that you could say is infecting South Africa now with this sort of populist Zumaite kind of rhetoric that we hear. That's starting next week, and I hope that a book will come out of that as well.
Sounds very, very interesting. Andrew, thanks for talking to us. I do appreciate it, and congratulations once again on winning the Alan Paton Award.
Many, many thanks.
The book is called These Are Not Gentle People, and it really does sound very interesting and worth a read. And the author is Andrew Harding.